at a very personal, individual level. Other times, we have a bigger spectrum that we are looking at, and that's the entire human society, entire human community. When I use polite speech, it, as a matter of fact, gives this encouragement to people around me to start using polite speech as well. And see, it's like very contagious, right? From one person to another, another person to another, and soon enough you realize that the entire society starts to transform. People are not being mean to each other in their speech, in their gestures, rather they're being polite. So it's really about developing and establishing this culture of politeness in the Islamic societies. And humans, all humans can benefit from it, and they feel relaxed, they don't have hypertension, they don't feel headache, you know, they don't really get into fights that often. Why? Because you created this environment of politeness. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam Al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام وقد سئل عن أفضل الأخلاق الصبر والسماحة.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, when asked about the best virtues, stated patience and magnanimity.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. We find in one of these interesting dialogues between a companion of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam himself, We find that in this dialogue, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir alayhi salam talks about alms. He talks about this charity or sadaqah, if you will. And so in this dialogue with his companion, Imam al-Baqir mentions the advantages which the one who gives alms obtains. And so now he's talking about this in a discussion with his companions. Imam al-Baqir says to them, when they asked about alms and sadaqah and charity, Imam al-Baqir said, "Shall I tell you about the thing which drives away the ruler and the Satan, Shaytan, Iblis, away from you?" And so Abu Hamza Somali, he replies to Imam al-Baqir, "Yes, please, Imam al-Baqir, tell us, what is it that drives away the corrupt and mean ruler and the Satan from us?" Imam al-Baqir replies, "Give alms, sadaqah, early in the morning, Allahu Akbar, for it darkens the Satan's face and breaks the greediness of the oppressive ruler on that day of yours." And then he says, "Love each other for the sake of Allah, help each other with good deeds, for such good deeds put an end to the Satan and the oppressive ruler." And then he says, "Insist on asking Allah for forgiveness, for such insistence erases sins." Allahu Akbar. In this beautiful dialogue between the companions of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam himself, we find the importance of giving sadaqah, of giving alms, of giving charity for the sake of Allah early in the morning, and all of the different and beautiful and powerful effects that this almsgiving has. It is so interesting, but this concept of sadaqah, this concept of giving alms, which is so important and integral in Islam, has been largely ignored by the rest of the world. Allahu Akbar. Islam, truly a perfect religion, the best religion, the most advanced religion for any time and for all time. Beautiful lessons which we learned in this dialogue between the companions of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Baqir himself. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
Just to let you know that when you hear these fatwa from our mujtahideen, you know, people ask this question, "Oh, mujtahids are giving fatwa, where does it come from?" Well, the fatwa in most cases basically are based on the ahadith of the imams of the Ahlul Bayt. Or even if it's not exactly from the wordings of the ahadith, it is based on the principles derived from the Quran and the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt. Somebody by the name of Abdullah bin Sulaiman, he says, "I asked the Imam about the cheese." The Imam said, "Oh, you reminded me of a very good thing. I love cheese." He took out some coins, gave it to his slave. He said, "Can you go and buy cheese for us?" And so he came back with the cheese. Then Imam, you know, asked him to spread the sufra with the bread, and he asked those people, "Come on, bismillah, sit down." So that they ate cheese. After all this da'wat is finished, this fellow again says, "Ma taqulu fil jubn?" "Oh Imam, what is your view about cheese?" Imam said, "Come on, we just ate this. You were my guest. I just got it, you know, from the market and we ate it." But this is where, you know, sometimes this ashab were insisting questions. It was for our benefit. At least we come to know more about it now. So this fellow says, yes, I saw you eating, I ate with you, but I would like to hear from you. What is your ruling about cheese? And Imam says, سَأُخْبِرُكَ عَنِ الْجُبْنِ وَغَيْرِهِ. I will let you know what is the ruling about cheese and other things like it. So I would classify that as non-meat products. كُلُّ مَا يَكُونُ فِيهِ حَلَالٌ وَحَرَامٌ فَهُوَ لَكَ حَلَالٌ حَتَّى تَعْرِفَ الْحَرَامُ بِعَيْنِهِ فَتَدَعُهُ. Imam says, such items, I'm paraphrasing that into non-meat products. If you're not sure this is halal or haram, it is halal for you until you come to know that this is haram. Once you know this is haram, then you have to stay away from it.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه وآله الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon the best of His creation, Prophet Muhammad, and His pure progeny. There are some of us who do not have any particular aim in life. They wander here and there, like a drifting ship that dashes against submerged rocks. We can also compare it to an aeroplane without a compass. People without a program of action also smash against the rocks of difficulties or sink in an ocean of nothingness. There also are some people who do have some program of activities, but midway to their goal, backtrack and begin to walk in another direction. Only those succeed who do not leave their path before reaching their goal, and even if the journey is very long, it does come to an end after continuous travel. Some people fail despite being active and prepared because their mind is not constant. It wavers and jumps from one place to another. They step in different fields, starting a new venture before completing the previous one. They are jack of all trades, but master of none, and they are not perfect in any particular field. Nature has taught us a nice lesson. If we continue to uproot a sapling and put it in another place over and over again, it would wither away and cannot grow up. But a plant that remains firmly rooted at the same spot grows into a huge tree. Then it flowers and also bears fruit. Want of concentration or hesitation is same as plant that is uprooted every now and then, so it neither flowers nor gives fruits. Rather, it withers away and dies. It is rightly said that concentrating the thoughts at one point is the hallmark of the wise. Taking up many assignments together bring personal loss and also harms the society. It can damage a nation's economy and culture and results in anarchy, which is difficult to control. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
the limelight.
Medical researchers are raising significant doubts on whether an agent of the human immune system causes some coronavirus patients to end up in the hospital with injured lungs and other organs struggling to breathe. What remains is a continuing mystery about what causes certain people to die from COVID-19 and how best to prevent that. What you just heard were words selected from an article written by journalist Gina Colata, who writes about science and medicine under the heading, An Explanation for Some COVID-19 Deaths May Not Be Holding Up. Stay with us for more of Gina Colata's article. Medical researchers are raising significant doubts about whether an agent of the human immune system causes some coronavirus patients to end up in hospital with injured lungs and other organs, struggling to breathe. What remains is a continuing mystery about what causes certain people to die from COVID-19 and how best to prevent that. A hypothesis that emerged early in the pandemic involves cytokine storm, an immune system response that is often invoked to explain several viral infections, and to many doctors it seemed to make perfect sense. Patients who died from COVID-19 were found to sometimes have little or no virus in their bodies. Their immune systems got rid of it, but in doing so, the hypothesis went, their body's defenses went rogue, spewing out powerful compounds, cytokines and other drivers of inflammation that fatally damage tissues and organs in a storm. But in a number of recent studies, some researchers say an agent suspected of causing the storm might not be the culprit, or that such storms might not happen in the way doctors believed. Not everyone agrees, though. Dr. Randy Cron, a professor of pediatrics and medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham in the United States, who has long studied cytokine storms, says some hospitalized COVID-19 patients do experience these immune overreactions. But he agrees that they are not identical to the reactions seen in other disorders, and much remains to be learned. The hypothesis is centered on one particular cytokine, interleukin-6, or IL-6. The belief that it might be the culprit in certain COVID-19 deaths began with reports from China early in the course of the pandemic. Doctors there said a patient who fared poorly had high levels of interleukin-6, or IL-6. The doctors tried using drugs that block IL-6, and the patient recovered. Similar reports followed there and also in Italy. A number of drugs that block IL-6 are on the market to treat rheumatoid arthritis. They also can stop severe immune reactions in other situations, such as a cytokine release syndrome that can occur with some cancer treatments and with adult onset of Still's disease, a rare form of inflammatory arthritis. But, said Dr. John Stone, a professor of medicine at Harvard University, these are not infections. Nonetheless, anti-IL-6 drugs quickly become a standard of care at many hospitals treating COVID-19 patients. The idea that they were quelling cytokine storms became widely accepted. It is so easy to have your brain remember the case that worked really well and ignore those that didn't work well, said Dr. Bruce Walker, an immunologist who is director of the Ragon Institute of Massachusetts General Hospital, MIT, and Harvard University, and was not involved in the new studies. Now, rigorous studies are failing to find that anti-IL-6 drugs are effective. Other studies are finding that IL-6 levels are not even highly elevated in COVID-19 patients compared to levels in other critically ill patients. Three studies found no evidence that a commonly used interleukin-6 inhibitor or IL-6 inhibitor, a rheumatoid arthritis treatment, reduced the death rate in severely ill coronavirus patients. One issue is with the very term cytokine storm. It has no definition, said Dr. Carolyn Colfi, an intensive care medicine specialist at the University of California in San Francisco. It is a colorful and captured the imagination of doctors and much of the public, but with no definition there, there are no diagnostic criteria to show that such a thing is taking place. And even if there is, IL-6 might be a bystander rather than a driver. Hundreds of cytokines are released when the immune system goes into action. They drive and suppress one another in complex feedback loops. You take this thing like spaghetti that is connected in so many different ways, Dr. Walker said. It is optimistic, he added, to think that IL-6 will be the answer to everything. Until recently, there were no systematic studies asking if interleukin-6 or IL-6 levels really were unusually high in COVID-19 patients. It turns out that they're often not. Dr. Jonathan Parr, an infectious disease expert at the University of North Carolina, checked IL-6 levels in his medical center's COVID-19 patients early in the pandemic. They were difficult to interpret, but generally were well below those seen in other inflammatory syndromes, where there are 27 times higher. Dr. Carolyn Colfi reviewed measurements reported in 5 studies with a total of more than 900 seriously ill coronavirus patients. Their IL-6 levels range from normal to slightly higher than normal. And even when cytokine levels are sky-high, drugs that squelch immune reactions do not help. Dr. William Fisher, a pulmonary and critical care physician at University of North Carolina, said the idea of a cytokine storm comes up in every severe viral infection. Examples include AIDS, Ebola, flu, Lassa fever, SARS, and MERS, he said. But, he said, it can be difficult to tease apart what drives pathology, whether it's just the virus or both the virus and the very immune response that is needed to clear the virus. The next step should be a randomized clinical trial, in which patients are randomly assigned to receive the experimental treatment or not. Instead, Dr. Fisher says, trials, if they started at all, tended to begin after tens of thousands of patients had already gotten the drugs, which muddied the ability to prove safety and effectiveness. So if not for this cytokine storm, what could be injuring the patients? Inflammation from a variety of immune system overreactions may play a role, according to researchers. One piece of evidence is that the steroid dexamethasone, which broadly suppresses the immune system, can reduce the death rate. But IL-6 is not the only possible driver of a damaging immune response, Dr. Stone said. Other inflammatory chemicals such as ferritin appear, and so does CRP, a protein that is a sign of inflammation. Many COVID-19 patients also suffer from blood clots, which themselves might be damaging lungs and other organs. Dr. Walker cites another possibility. He was an author of a study that found that the virus can destroy germinal centers, places in lymph nodes where antibodies are produced. The result can be fewer antibodies and less effective ones, and it still remains possible that administering anti-IL-6 drugs may help if done earlier or later during a patient's illness. We need randomized clinical trials to answer these hard questions, Dr. Stone said. Dr. Caroline Calfe said the new findings should be teaching doctors a lesson. We have to be really humble about biologic complexity, she said. For now, Dr. Walker said, he and many others are sadder but wiser about using anti-IL-6 drugs to treat COVID-19 patients. All of us were hopeful that this would work, he said, but it was definitely worth a try.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, Let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام لا خير في الصمت عن الحكم كما أنه لا خير في القول بالجهل.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "There is no advantage in keeping quiet about an issue of wisdom, just as there is no good in speaking out an unintelligent thing."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program Stu, My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. One of the great lessons and things which we learn, dear friends, from Imam Ali alayhi salam is that we should be strong when it comes to knowledge, when it comes to divine sciences, jurisprudence, and even politics and governmental administration. We find, dear friends, that the wise sayings, the wise thoughts, and the knowledgeable discussions of Imam Ali alayhi salam are still available even after the passing of over 1,000 years. And even in today's time, there is no thinker which has the audacity or even the knowledge base to be able to refute the wise thoughts and the knowledgeable discussions of Imam Ali. For surely there is no thinker, no philosopher, nor any reformer who can dare to refute the views of Imam Ali, especially with regards to divine sciences, jurisprudence, the secrets of the natural world, and even politics and governmental administration. They aren't even able to replace these ideas and views of Imam Ali with their own theories and ideas. Of course, as we have said in past programs, this is because Imam Ali's knowledge and wisdom was connected directly with the knowledge and the wisdom of the Holy Prophet, who in turn is directly connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Imam Ali alayhi salam himself was also connected to divine knowledge. And so the principles of governance, they keep changing every day in today's day and age. One day it's democracy, one day it's liberalism, one day it's conservatism, one day it's republicanism, one day it's anarchy, one day it's revolution. So again, the principles of governance, communism, socialism, Western liberal democracy, they keep on changing every day. As time moves forwards, we find the flaws in these governmental systems. But the system of Imam Ali's rulership is such that there is no scope of changes or alteration, and it is so beautiful that it has never needed to change. Truly, when one realizes and the world realizes the truth about Imam Ali alayhi salam as regards to divine sciences and jurisprudence and the secrets of the natural world,
the science of the natural world, politics and governmental administration, and the world thinks about these things, it will certainly accept the views and the ideas of Imam Ali alayhi salam. A profound lesson regarding the life of Imam Ali, especially as regards to divine sciences, fiqh, jurisprudence, science as far as the secrets of the natural world, and politics and governmental administration, all brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
Today I would like to focus on one or two examples from non-Muslims who admire the sermons of Amir al-Mu'mineen, especially when it comes to Nahj al-Balagha. And we are talking about the non-Muslims of the present day. Let me start with one example from Christian Arab community. You know, Lebanon and Palestine has this Christian community from the Arabic background. They have been there from centuries, from before Islam, especially in Lebanon. And because they are culturally, ethnically Arab, for them, Arabic language is part of their life. And for them, even to learn Arabic literature, they study Quran as well as they study Nahj al-Balagha. And this is the reason why you see many of the Christian writers of Lebanon, you know, admire Ali, they adore his life and his sayings, and many of them ended up writing books about him. One of them is a person by the name of Suleiman Qattani. Suleiman Qattani wrote a book in the 60s. Actually, it was part of the competition essay competition announced by the Hawza Ilmiya of Najaf in the 60s on Amir al-Mu'mineen. On the occasion, it was something to do with 1300th anniversary. And many, many submissions were sent to that committee in Hawza. It's amazing that the first prize went to not a Shia writer, not a Sunni writer. It went to Suleiman Katani, a Christian writer from Lebanon. And that book became very famous. Of course, he writing it from a Christian, non-Muslim background. You know, the committee did not always agree with all the statements, but they still considered it worthy to be placed as number one in the prize. And it was published with some editorial notes of the committee wherever, you know, statements might not be in totally in line with the Shi'i perspective. And his book, you know, fortunately also exists in English. And the title in English is Imam Ali, Source of Life, Wisdom, and Might.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. U.S. President Donald Trump has fired his Defense Secretary Mark Esper in the latest sign that the transition to a new
Biden administration in January is going to be turbulent on both domestic and foreign fronts. Mark Esper was fired by tweet on Monday afternoon, with the president declaring he was pleased to announce that Christopher C. Miller, the highly respected director of National Counterterrorism Center, unanimously confirmed by the Senate, will be acting Secretary of Defense effective immediately. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Julian Borger. The piece is titled, Mark Esper Fired as Pentagon Chief After Contradicting Trump. Stay with us for more of Julian Borger's article. U.S. President Donald Trump has fired his Defense Secretary Mark Esper in the latest sign that the transition to a new Biden administration in January is going to be turbulent on both domestic and foreign fronts. Mark Esper was fired by tweet on Monday afternoon, with the president declaring he was pleased to announce that Christopher C. Miller, the highly respected director of National Counterterrorism Center, unanimously confirmed by the Senate, will be acting Secretary of Defense effective immediately. Chris will do a great job. Mark Esper has been terminated. I would like to thank him for his service. Esper had been at odds with Donald Trump on a number of issues, most importantly his insistence at the height of the Black Lives Matter protests in the summer that there were no legal grounds to deploy active service troops on the streets of U.S. cities. He was also working with Congress on legislation to rename U.S. Army bases named after Confederate generals. In a final interview, Mark Esper predicted that he would be followed by a yes man, adding, "And then God help us." In a coolly worded final letter to the president, Mark Esper wrote, "I serve the country in deference to the Constitution, so I accept your decision to replace me." He left the Pentagon quietly on Monday afternoon without the clap-out from staff traditionally accorded to a departing Secretary of Defense. Miller arrived at the Pentagon on Monday amid questions about the legality of his appointment. By law, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, currently David Norquist, would become Acting Secretary of Defense in the event of a sudden departure at the top. Furthermore, the law requires that a Secretary of Defense to have been out of active duty military service for 7 years. Miller, a former Green Beret, only left the military in 2014, 6 years ago. The law can be sidestepped by a vote in Congress, as was done for Esper's predecessor, James Mattis, a retired Marine general. In the face of Trump's widely reported fury of his intransigence, Mark Esper stopped giving press briefings in the Pentagon in July. He is reported to have written his resignation letter before the election, and Donald Trump may have moved abruptly to prevent his defense secretary from taking the initiative. President Trump insisted he fired retired Marine General James Mattis in December of 2018, even though Mattis's critical resignation letter had been widely circulated. The abrupt firing of Secretary Esper is disturbing evidence that President Trump is intent on using his final days in office to sow chaos in our American democracy and around the world, the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said. In an interview with Military Times, given the day after the election and published on Monday, Mark Esper said he was proud of the occasions he stood up to Donald Trump, angry rejecting the nickname of Yesper, used by critics who saw him as too subservient to Donald Trump. "My frustration is I sit here and say, 18 cabinet members. Who's pushed back more than anybody? Name another cabinet secretary that's pushed back, Esper said. Have you seen me on a stage saying, under the exceptional leadership of blah, 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 we have blah, 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 blah? He claims success in protecting the institution, which is really important to me, and preserving my integrity in the process. At the end of the day, it's as I said, you've got to pick your fights, he added. I could have a fight over anything, and I could make it a big fight, and I could live with that. Why? Who's going to come in behind me? It's going to be a real yes man, and then, God help us. This is purely an act of retaliation by a president thinking more about his petty grievances than about the good of the country, said Lawrence Korb, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Lawrence Korb added, it will make the transition to a new administration even more difficult. The message it sends around the world is that Donald Trump is going to continue his disruptive policies for the rest of his time in office. Meanwhile, Mark Esper may not be the last head to fall in the national security leadership. CNN cited an unnamed senior official that Mark Esper feared the directors of FBI and CIA, Christopher Wray and Gina Haspel, would be next to go. Though President Donald Trump has not conceded defeat in the presidential election, Christopher Miller will only have a little more than 2 months in the role before Joe Biden enters the White House. Mark Esper was Donald Trump's second permanent Secretary of Defense after James Mattis, a retired U.S. Marine Corps general who resigned in late 2018. General Mattis was succeeded by Patrick Shanahan, a former Boeing executive who spent months in the role but was not formally confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Donald Trump came close to firing Esper on 3rd of June when the former Raytheon arms executive publicly contradicted the president over the potential use of the 1807 Insurrection Act to deploy active duty military units against protesters in Washington and other U.S. cities. Mark Esper said the circumstances did not justify the use of the act, which can empower a president to send troops into states against the wishes of local authorities. President Trump had threatened to invoke the law 2 days earlier. Following Esper's remarks, the White House noted it was a decision for the president alone. Mark Esper had also given orders for a battalion of the 82nd Airborne Division and military police units to return to base after they had been flown to the Washington area. He reversed the withdrawal order after visiting the White House, but the troops were withdrawn a few days later. According to reports, quoting administration sources at the time, Donald Trump's aides advised him against firing his second defense secretary, and Mark Esper was urged not to offer his resignation by his own advisors. According to the Wall Street Journal, he had already begun to draft a resignation letter. Esper and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, were heavily criticized by former senior defense officials and military leaders for appearing alongside Donald Trump on 1st of June at a photo opportunity outside a church near the White House, after the surrounding area had been cleared by police and other federal security forces using tear gas, mounted police, and baton charges. The Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, later apologized for his appearance, saying he should not have been there.